Here's an experiment buried on page 2 of this paper. You give a language model a list of numbers, just a list, and you ask it to sum them. Now you simulate one of the popular speed-up tricks people use. When the model goes to look back through its context, you randomly hide one token from it. If the token you hide is a the or a comma, no problem. The model gets the right sum. But if the token you hide is one of the numbers, even just one of them, the model returns the wrong answer. Not a slightly wrong answer, a different answer.
Right. And the reason that's a problem isn't the experiment itself, it's that essentially every popular method for making long context inference fast does exactly that. Picks some subset of tokens to attend to, drops the rest, and hopes the dropped ones didn't matter. The paper's argument is that this assumption is silently catastrophic. The errors don't degrade gracefully. They cliff.
Which is the puzzle this paper sets out to fix. It went up on Archive on May 7th, 2026, and we're recording 4 days later. Full title, Sparse Attention as a Range Searching Problem, Towards an Inference-Efficient Index for KV Cache, by Mohsen Degankar and Abul Fazl Asudeh at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Quick production note before we get in. This episode is AI generated. The script is written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7. I'm Jessica. Tyler and I are AI voices from 11 Labs. Neither company has any hand in producing the show. And the framing the paper proposes, the range searching part of that title, is the move worth sitting with because it reroutes a problem the field has been thinking about wrong for years.
So let me set up the wrong thinking part, because that's where it starts. When a transformer generates a token, it looks back at every prior token in its context, runs a single dot product against each one, and that gives a relevant score. Most of those scores are near zero. Attention is incredibly concentrated. So the obvious shortcut is, just pick the top few hundred highest scoring tokens, ignore the rest. Top K retrieval. And once you frame it that way, you reach naturally for the tools the search engine world has been refining for 30 years. Approximate nearest neighbor algorithms. Vector databases. The same machinery that powers semantic search and recommendation systems.
And those algorithms are approximate by design. They guarantee speed, not completeness. For web search, that's totally fine. If a result is one place lower than it should be, nobody notices. The whole industry is built on that being okay. The authors of this paper are saying, for attention, it's not okay. Going back to the sum the list experiment, if your approximate index misses the key vector for one of the numbers, your model doesn't return a slightly worse answer. It returns a wrong one. The acceptable failure mode in nearest neighbor search is the unacceptable failure mode here.
And the second observation in the paper makes this even worse than it already sounds. They take a 14 billion parameter reasoning model, the kind that thinks out loud before answering, and they trace what happens during a 2,000 token chain of thought. For each decoded token, they record, how many prior tokens would you need to cover half the attention mass? And the answer oscillates wildly. Sometimes it's 2% of the context. Sometimes it's 6%. The graph is jagged.
And the part I love is that they actually decode the windows around the spikes and the troughs to show you what's happening. The narrow moments, when the model only needs a handful of recent tokens, are template scaffolding. Periods. The word let's, subcase 1a, the kind of boilerplate the model can produce while looking at almost nothing. But the wide moments, when the model suddenly needs to attend across hundreds of tokens at once, those are exactly the moments where the chain of thought says things like, wait, no, let me recount, or actually, hold on. The introspective backtracking moments, the places where the model is reconsidering.
Which is brutal for any method that uses a fixed budget. If you set your budget high enough to handle those backtracking moments, you're wasting most of your compute on the easy template steps. If you set it tight enough to be efficient on the template steps, you starve the model exactly when it's doing the hardest reasoning. There's no good single number.
So that's the setup. Sparse attention is the standard speedup. It's approximate by design. The approximation fails catastrophically on the very tokens that matter. And reasoning models, which are increasingly the frontier, make the problem worse because the set of tokens that matter is wildly non-stationary. Tyler, this is where the paper makes its real move.
Yeah, and the move is conceptual before it's technical. The authors say, "We've been describing this problem with the wrong vocabulary. Top K retrieval is the wrong frame. The right frame is geometric. So picture this, and I want to actually build the picture because once you see it, everything else falls into place. Every key vector, every stored summary of a prior token, is a point sitting somewhere in a high-dimensional space. Doesn't matter for the picture that it's high-dimensional, imagine it in two dimensions for now. A scatter plot of dots. The query, when a new token gets generated, is just an arrow pointing in some direction in that same space. And the relevance score of a key, that dot product, is geometrically equivalent to how far that key extends along the query's direction. Projected onto the arrow, that projection length is the score."
Okay, so I'm imagining the scatter plot and the arrow. Where does the threshold come in?
The threshold is a line, perpendicular to the arrow, at whatever distance corresponds to relevant enough to keep. Everything on the far side of that line, everything whose projection onto the arrow is past the threshold, those are the keys we want. Everything on the near side, we can throw away. That region of space, everything past the line, is what geometers call a half space.
And so the question of which keys are relevant to this query becomes which of these scattered points lie inside the half space defined by this query and threshold.
Exactly. And that, finding which of a fixed set of points lies inside a query half space, is a problem computational geometers have been studying for decades. It's called half-space range searching. There's a whole literature on indexing structures for it. The author's first contribution is just noticing that this is the right name for the problem the field has been trying to solve. Approximate nearest neighbor is the wrong category. This isn't a ranking question, it's a region question.
And the reframing isn't just aesthetic. Tyler, can you say a bit about why nearest neighbor was actually wrong here, mechanically? Not just approximate is bad, but specifically why the geometry doesn't fit.
Yeah, three reasons, and they're each load-bearing. First, nearest neighbor algorithms typically need you to normalize your vectors, strip out the magnitudes, keep only the directions, so distance becomes angle. But in transformers, the magnitudes of the key vectors carry meaning. The paper measures this on Qwen 2.57b instruct for a single prompt, and the key norms span a factor of about 2,500, the smallest under 1, the largest over 900. That's more than three orders of magnitude on just that one model and prompt, and the authors flag it as illustrative rather than a universal bound. Normalize that away and you've destroyed information the model is actively using. Second, nearest neighbor algorithms assume the queries and the database points come from the same distribution. That's the regime they're optimized for. But in attention, queries and keys are projections through different weight matrices. Different geometry, different distributions. The optimization doesn't apply. And third, the one we just talked about, nearest neighbor gives you the closest K. Attention wants everything above a bar. Those are different answer shapes. The everything above a bar answer is variable in size, which is exactly what the reasoning trace told us we need.
Right, so the reframing names the right problem and clears the conceptual ground. But now you actually have to build an index that can answer half-space queries fast. Because computational geometry has theoretical answers, KD trees, R trees, but those are too heavy for the hardware they need to run on.
Correct. So this is where they build the actual system. It's called Louver. And the design has two ideas stacked on each other that I think are worth taking slowly. Because each one is intuitive in isolation, but they multiply. The first idea is bounding balls. Picture the scatter plot again. The keys are points in space. You take small groups of those points, they use groups of four, and you draw the tightest possible sphere around each group, just a center and a radius. Now, at query time, instead of testing every individual key against the query's half space, you test the sphere.
And the test is, could any point inside this sphere possibly clear the threshold?
Right. And that's a one-line calculation. You take the dot product of the query with the sphere's center, you add the radius times the length of the query, which is the most generous boost any point on the sphere's surface could give you, and you compare to the threshold. If even that optimistic upper bound doesn't clear the bar, no point inside the sphere can, and you skip the entire cluster. Four keys eliminated for the cost of testing one sphere.
It's the real estate agent move. A client wants a house under some price in some neighborhood. The agent draws a circle around each cluster of houses with a summary price and location. If the best possible house in a cluster, the cheapest one, closest to the desired neighborhood, still can't meet the criteria, the agent doesn't even look inside the cluster. The ball test is exactly that. You test the most favorable case. If it fails, you skip everything.
Yeah, that's the picture. And there's a subtle design choice here that matters a lot. They use a fixed group size rather than a fixed number of groups. If you fix the number of clusters, then as your context grew longer, each cluster would have more and more keys in it. The balls would get bigger to enclose them, and your pruning power would just evaporate. By fixing the size of each cluster at four keys, the balls stay tight forever. The number of clusters grows linearly with the cache, but each individual test stays sharp.
And that's just the first idea. The second one is the part that I think is the real cleverness.
Yeah, so you've got a scatter plot of keys in a high-dimensional space, say 128 dimensions, typical for a transformer. The balls in 128 dimensions are not as effective as you'd want. High-dimensional balls are weird. They subtend a lot of angle relative to a half space. So instead of indexing in the full space, they slice the dimensions into chunks. 16 chunks of 8 dimensions each, for instance. They build a separate index in each chunk. And to survive a query, a cluster has to pass the ball test in every single chunk. Fail in any one slice, get pruned everywhere.
This is the airport security picture. Independent filters in series. You have to clear the ID check, the metal detector, and the bag scan. Failing any one stops you. And if you have 16 of those instead of 3, almost nothing makes it through.
Exactly. And the geometry favors this enormously, because each lower dimensional ball is much more discriminating than the original high dimensional ball. So 16 independent low dimensional filters in series prune dramatically more than one high dimensional filter would. The headline number the paper gives is that with 16 subspaces, the index only ends up actually computing dot products against 16.3% of the keys. The other 84% are pruned out before they ever get touched.
And, this is the part that took me a second, every relevant key still gets found. The pruning is exact. If a key would clear the threshold, no chain of ball tests can ever incorrectly reject it. Because each test asks, could this region possibly contain a passing point? And only prunes when the answer is provably no. The guarantee is mathematical, not statistical.
That's the heart of it. Zero false negatives by construction. There's actually a second version of the query algorithm they propose, which adapts a database algorithm from the 1990s. The intuition is just sweep through ranked candidates in parallel and stop the moment no remaining unseen candidate could possibly clear the threshold. Same guarantee, different way of getting there. The point is, the framework supports multiple algorithms, all with the completeness property.
Let's talk about what happens when you actually run this, because the results are, I want to be careful with words like surprising, but the combination really is unusual.
Go for it.
The headline number is 15.3 times faster than the standard PyTorch attention kernel on GPU at 40,000 tokens of context. That's nice. But the more interesting comparison is to flash attention, the highly optimized, hardware-aware, dense attention kernel that's basically the baseline everyone competes against in inference work. Luver beats flash attention on wall clock latency at long context. And that's surprising because flash attention is doing a lot of clever fused kernel work to make dense attention fast on actual GPUs. Luver wins not because it has a better dense kernel, it doesn't, but because it does substantially less work, and the overhead of figuring out what work to skip is small enough that the savings come through.
And then on the accuracy side, the recall numbers tell the cleanest story. Luver retrieves essentially every relevant key, over 99.9% recall. The approximate nearest neighbor baselines they compare against get between 60 and 93%. So those methods are missing somewhere between 7 and 40% of relevant keys, every single decoding step. And we know from the sum the list experiment what missing relevant keys does to a model.
The result that I think is the most genuinely striking is on the reasoning benchmarks. On the Math 500 benchmark, Luver, which is supposed to be a speed-up method, an approximation method, something that gives up a little accuracy for speed, actually exceeds the accuracy of full dense attention. 62% versus 58%.
Which is a result that shouldn't quite be possible if you think of this as a speed-accuracy trade-off, right? You can't beat the full thing by doing less of it.
Right, that's the weirdness. The authors don't fully explain it, but the most plausible reading is that the threshold is doing a kind of denoising. There are keys in the cache that have small, distracting attention scores. Not noise exactly, but contributions that don't actually help the model and may slightly degrade its output. By keeping only the keys that genuinely matter, you're cleaning up the signal. Whether that holds up under broader testing is an open question, but on this specific benchmark, the approximation is more accurate than the exact version it's approximating. That's not what trade-off curves are supposed to look like.
Yeah, and I want to flag something here, because I want us to be honest about what the paper is and isn't showing. Jessica, on most of the longer benchmarks, Longbench, Ruler, the accuracy edge over flash attention is modest. 41.8% versus 41.7% on Longbench. That's noise. The dramatic recall gap doesn't translate proportionally into end task accuracy on those benchmarks. Which is interesting in itself. It tells us that the false negatives from approximate methods often happen on tokens that didn't end up mattering much. The catastrophic failure cases exist. They just aren't necessarily what these benchmarks are stressing.
Which is a fair critique, and there are a few others worth airing.
Yeah, the biggest one for me is the threshold. Luver's central guarantee is, we return every key whose score exceeds threshold tau. But that threshold has to come from somewhere. The paper proposes some heuristics, reservoir sampling estimators that try to set it so the resulting set is about the right size. But it ultimately concedes that the threshold can be supplied by prior methods. If the threshold itself is poorly chosen, the zero false negatives guarantee is technically true, but practically empty. You return everything above the bar, but the bar was in the wrong place. The estimates they report have coefficient of variation up to 25%. That's not nothing.
So the question becomes, how much of the framework's elegance is real progress versus how much of it has been pushed into the threshold selection problem, which is itself approximate? It's a fair pushback. The right read is probably that the geometric framing is genuinely the contribution, and threshold estimation is now the next interesting problem inside that framing, rather than the whole question being approximation versus exactness.
The other thing I'd flag is the memory overhead. Luver stores parent centers for all its clusters, and that metadata adds up to about 28% of the KV cache footprint in their offloading experiment. In a regime where GPU memory is the bottleneck, which it often is, that's real. The authors acknowledge it and propose using actual keys as cluster representatives to eliminate the overhead, but that's future work. As shipped, this isn't a free index.
Worth saying, though, in the offloading scenario, where the cache lives on CPU and gets pulled to GPU on demand, the system as a whole is so much better than the alternatives that the memory overhead is a reasonable trade. The number that stuck with me? Luver's index lookup is 0.07 milliseconds per step. The nearest neighbor competitors are between 5 and 54 milliseconds. That's 2 to 3 orders of magnitude. And the F1 accuracy on long bench under offloading is around 39% for Luver versus around 26% for the next best competitor, roughly a 50% relative improvement. So in that specific regime, serving very long contexts cheaply by keeping the cache off the GPU, the case is unambiguous.
One more critique, and this one is more of a steel man than something I'd push hard on. The subspace decomposition trick, splitting into 16 chunks and anding the filters, assumes the chunks behave independently enough that the multiplicative pruning actually pays off. The geometry of any given model's key distribution might correlate across chunks in ways that erode the gain. The ablations look fine for the models they tested, but for very different architectures or training regimes, the effect could be smaller.
Fair. And the AIM benchmark is small, 30 problems. So a single problem either way is over 3%. The Math 500 numbers are more robust, but still on one model. So the reasoning model results, which are the most surprising part of the paper, are also the ones with the thinnest statistical legs. That's worth being honest about.
Yeah, okay. So where does this leave the field?
I think there are two layers. There's the immediate practical layer, which is, if you're trying to serve long context inference efficiently, especially in the regime where your KV cache is offloaded to CPU and you're pulling pieces back on demand, Luver looks like a meaningful step forward. Better accuracy, dramatically faster retrieval, and a completeness guarantee that no other method offers. That's deployment-relevant work. But the deeper layer is the reframing itself. The field has been treating attention retrieval as an approximate search problem, importing techniques from web search and recommendation systems, and accepting approximation as the price of speed. This paper says the abstraction was wrong. This was always a geometry problem, and the geometry literature has tools that handle the exact version. If that framing catches on, Luver is just the first system that lives inside it. There are probably better indexing structures in the same family waiting to be built.
Yeah, and the part that's going to stay with me is the reasoning model angle. We're moving toward a world where models think for thousands of tokens before answering, where what they need to attend to changes from moment to moment, and where the moments that matter most, the wait, let me reconsider moments, are exactly the ones that any fixed budget method handles worst. If reasoning is the frontier, then methods that adapt to what each step actually needs, while guaranteeing they don't miss anything, are going to be more important than methods that just shave wall clock off an average step.
The paper opens with a Mother Teresa quote, "The ocean would be less because of that missing drop." I almost flinched when I saw it. But it captures the thesis exactly. The field has been treating dropped tokens as acceptable noise. This paper says, sometimes the dropped token is the one that mattered. And if you can't tell which one it'll be, you can't drop any of them.
Right. The paper is by Mohsen Degonkar and Abul Fazl Asudeh at the University of Illinois, Chicago, posted to Archive earlier this month. This was AI Papers, a deep dive. Papers linked in the show notes, along with a couple of related reads if you want to keep pulling on this thread. Thanks for listening.